introduce themselves, beginning with Michael Salabar.
That word not working.
We lost Michael Salabar?
Michael?
Yes.
Introduce yourself.
Michael Salabar, Birdsville, Somerset County.
Mimi Letts, Persephone.
Tracy Carluccio, East Amwell Township, Hunterdon County, public number.
Jack Shire, Freeholder, Morris County.
Debbie Pascarelli, Greenwich Township, Warren County, representative.
Glenn Vitrano, Sussex County, Freeholder.
Janice Kovach, Councilwoman, Town of Clinton, Hunterdon County.
Scott Whitenack, public member from Morristown.
All the way, please rise for pledge allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
This meeting was advertised in compliance with the Open Public Meetings Act, and it and all other actions of the Highlands Council are publicized on the Council's website, which is the best and most comprehensive source of information about the activities planned and passed of the Highlands Council at this time. The agenda and documents we will be discussing today are available, I guess, on the table in the reception area. Public did not pick them up and would like them. They are there. We have minutes from our last meeting, June 1st. We have a motion to pass minutes.
Move the minutes.
Second.
Are there any comments or corrections to the minutes? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions?
Yes.
Okay. One abstention? My report, just a couple of things. At the last council meeting, we approved sending a letter to the Office of Smart Growth and the Department of Community Affairs on the proposed Sussex County plan submitted to the Compliance with the State Planning Act. We passed that resolution because we thought we had until June 30th to submit comments, which we did at that time. Since then, the director, Don DiPiro, has been in contact with Irene Swan, the director of the Office of Smart Growth, and learned that we don't have to submit. We have more time. There's going to be more deliberations between Sussex County and the Office of Smart Growth, and that we could submit comments in fall, I guess, or late fall. On that basis, we have not sent the letter, and we're going to wait and see what happens as time goes by. Maybe this should have been first, but Dante will include his report, but we're delighted that our efforts to fill the staff vacancies on the Highlands Council have been proceeding pretty rapidly, and we have a number of people who are starting, a number who are about to start, a number of people who have been loaned to us by other agencies, so we are making great progress in that area, and which will make a big difference. Third thing, which I'll get into more when we talk about the Plan Development Committee, but we need to focus more on the schedule for the council members, full council meetings, subcommittee meetings, and get some meeting dates on calendars so that we can anticipate all the meetings we're going to have to get, particularly to get the draft regional plan out and to consider it and get it out. The proposal we discussed in the Plan Development Committee is that we all try to block out every Thursday and every Saturday in the month of September and see how many of those we actually need to have detailed work sessions, lengthy ones. We would not end up having eight of those, but Denise will be sending an email to all of us asking our availability then, and I'd ask everyone, and also to note in the minutes for those who aren't here today, that it's really important that people can't be available, so be it, but that as many people as possible be available for those, because I think that would be very important, very detailed, to give us all the background we need to make the decisions we have to make on the draft next. That's all I have to report. Do members have items to report?
I do.
I attended two meetings in the last month. I want to share with the other council members. First was on June the 12th. It was the meeting that our staff participated in that was held in Warren County with zoning officials and I believe construction officials. That was an educational session. It was run by Larry Byers from DEP. Jeff LaJog was there from our staff. I was there. I don't think anybody else from here. But I just wanted, we've talked about this for a long time. Glenn, I think you have one of these in Sussex already. It was, I thought, extremely productive. The people were there, I think, were the right people that we would have liked to have seen there. Why we put the session together, Larry Byers was, I think, very informative. But the questions raised by the people who were there indicate we still have a long way to go. We, I mean, collectively, it's not our responsibility as a council, but we collectively as state employees and appointees to ensure that the right decisions, the right information is being used. Those making decisions on the street have, we discussed this when Lisa Jackson was here, have the information they need to render the right decision. So that's the good news and the bad news. The second meeting I attended on Monday was a meeting of, I think it's seven municipalities in Hunterdon County related to the cross-acceptance process with Eileen Swan. Janice was there as a council member, as a Clinton council member. I was an invited guest by one of the officials, and there, I believe the meeting was called so that there was a, part of it was a better understanding of the process of cross-acceptance in the Highlands Council. Now, the good news, again, I think it was good exchange of information. The not-so-good news is there was information discussed at that meeting that sounded like policy decisions from the Highlands Council, which we have not addressed. And I think we need to have, and this relates also to the Sussex County matter, I think we as a council need to put this on an upcoming agenda and have some discussions about what the policy is going to be. With regard to the State Planning Act and the cross-acceptance process, because the information I heard represented, and I have a phone call later from one of the elected officials about this, I could not validate, I could not confirm what was being said at that meeting was indeed a council policy decision. So I think that's something, and sooner rather than later, we all know the cross-acceptance process has been stalled, but it seems to be moving forward again, and it does have implications for all 88 of our municipalities. So to that extent, I think we're going to have to keep this on one of our front burners.
Well, one of our front burners on this is two fronts. It's the Smart Growth meeting we have this afternoon, Smart Growth meeting. We can begin to discuss it there.
I won't be there.
Oh, you won't be there.
I'm not drawing out.
Okay. Right. If you're not there, we won't discuss it. But we'll find another avenue. Thank you. Other comments? Okay. Dante DeFiro, Director of Recovery.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The first matter is staffing, and we're very pleased, as you've indicated, Mr. Chairman, to announce that we've had good progress in the Department of Personnel with regard to finally being able to fully staff up and fill our positions. We have had two rounds of recommendations that we've sent down to the Department of Personnel. The first round was for a number of environmental scientists, who we critically need for developing our regional master plan. Those have been approved by DOP. Those folks have signed on, and they're already hard at work. I want to take this opportunity just to introduce some of those folks now. They include Christine Ross, who was just here a moment ago. I'll put the finger on her later. Aaron Lynham, who's over here behind, one of our scientists. Carl Figueredo, also joining us on the science staff. And we have other folks who've been helping out as well, but those folks specifically now are on our staff and are working hard. We have another round of a couple of individuals down at Department of Personnel, and we hope to get prompt action on them as well. As you know, we're under an important deadline and have a very important plan to develop. We had an opportunity today to introduce some staff to the members who are here, and we're appreciative of that, and we think there's going to be a close working relationship with our great new staff and the members of the council in our important work. In terms of the regional master plan update, we continue to make good progress. We've included progress reports in your members' packages. They show that we are approximately 60% complete or developed on our plan. We are pushing the envelope in terms of speeding up our processing time to deliver products even more expeditiously to the council. Of course, that effort will be helped in great measure by our new employees. In addition, it's already been helped through a number of gracious lends from sister agencies. In particular, I want to highlight Debbie Lawler from the Meadowlands Commission, who's been helping us out, who's their chief planner at Meadowlands, who's been extraordinarily helpful. In addition, we have now, as of last week, gotten some wonderful assistance from two very seasoned and senior folks who've already had experience with Highlands. The group is the New Jersey Water Supply Commission, and they've graciously lent us Dag Madeira and Ron Farr. And those folks, I'm not sure if they're still here. I think they were going to pop in for a few moments. And there they are in the back. There's Dag and Ron, who's Shire's next to him. But they told me they were going to stop in for a few moments to see what our council meetings were like, and then they were going to run back and start cranking more data. So we're also extremely appreciative of them and their commitment. A couple of things which I call functionality, improvements we've been trying to make, again, to increase our efficiency. One is, I described previously how we were working to set up a video conferencing capability here at the council. We've now been able to do that at a very low cost. We're now able to link to departments in Trenton, and so to have our folks spend less time on the road, less time going down there, and less cost in terms of getting there, and making sure our coordination is top-notch, because we're going to need to share resources, data, and the like to develop our plan. So that's up and running. If anyone's interested, we'll give you a demonstration, but didn't want to take the time to do it during today's meeting. Also, on the functionality side, you'll notice that this area is largely cleaned up. We had an electrical contractor come in, and you'll see none of the dangerous wires on the floor anymore, except a couple in the middle, because although it came in at 6 a.m. this morning, wasn't quite able to finish. But we want to make sure that the space is fully usable. The tables are a little bit longer now, so we can make sure to get all members and have staff around and still have an opportunity for the public. So another thing we're trying to do to be full service. In that regard, we also today want to show to the council and to the public an example of the outreach services we're doing for landowners. Landowners have been telling us that they're concerned about finding in an easy way whether they're in or out of the preservation area. So this council previously approved us moving forward with a program that we can post on the web where you can go in an easy fashion, quickly determine whether you're in or out of the preservation area. And we now have that product ready, and we'll give you a short demonstration today. In terms of committees, as the chairman indicated this morning, Plan Development Committee met this afternoon, so everyone knows the Smart Growth Committee will be meeting. The Smart Growth Committee's agenda will include a presentation from staff on the fiscal element. We'll also just have a discussion on the criteria for delineating growth areas. Your packet contains information about the recent events that members or staff has attended in our efforts to continue good ongoing outreach with the public and with local municipalities, counties, and the state. We have some upcoming events that are listed. You'll see only a couple in June and July because it's kind of a lesser summer schedule, and that's going to fit our purposes just fine as we move to produce as much as we can through the summer so that by September the council will be able to go through work sessions and weigh heavily into the policy decisions we need to make. Mr. Chairman, that brings us just to one final item, and that's the main item for today, which is the council hits a milestone where we are able to release to the public for the first time preliminary technical information relating to the regional master plan. A couple months ago, the council resolved to publicly release preliminary information in June. The purpose of that release would be to inform stakeholders and also give an important progress update on where we are. I can tell you that since that time, staff has been working exceedingly hard to prepare for the release of that information. Today, we're in a position where we have literally dozens of preliminary technical information for your consideration for release. And those include technical memoranda, data, and maps that have been created specifically to further and advance development of the regional master plan. The kind of information that we're describing relates to critical elements in the plan, such as water, open waters, agricultural lands, utility capacity, build-out, fiscal and economic, and other subjects of importance. The data that we're proposing today will be ready for rollout over the next several weeks, and we have several samples that are available for the public's review today. Some of the samples include maps, so you can see the type of images that will be accessible to you. They include a couple technical reports so that you can see the approaches and the way that we have gone forward to collect this data. Nothing in what we're releasing today constitutes, and we don't need to go into right now, we'll do it a little later.
Okay.
Matt from MIS is ready to do it, but we'll queue it up a little later. None of the things that we're proposing for release today are final. They haven't gone through full council review. They haven't gone through the important public review process. But we feel that it is critical to get information out to you as we create it so that the public can be informed participants in the process. The process that we have going forward will include the ongoing committee meetings where the very technical issues and data issues will be actively discussed. And that's the critical way for the public to plug into the process to make sure that you have an opportunity to provide your input as the council members think through the policy choices that need to be made. In addition, to promote public participation, the council has prepared a new web page specifically for regional master plan releases. And through that web page, the members of the public can directly access this information as we roll it out. And this is in addition to our committee website. Committee websites which show what the agenda items are. We anticipate that as we move forward, it will be a readily accessible way for you to take a look at and print out for your own review the information that the council is releasing. In addition, we'll have a direct email address, which is rmpcomments@highlands.state.ng.us, and that will be a specific place for you to send in your comments. It will be easy for you to access. It will be easy for us to track your comments so that our members can be informed of what the sentiments are, what the suggestions are, and that they can build it into their process. And finally, the council is exploring and will be evaluating the opportunities for input going forward, and will take appropriate steps to make sure that if additional input is needed, we'll be able to do that. Because input is has always been a critical part of our transparent process. So today, members of the public should know the council will be considering a resolution that would authorize the rollout of this preliminary technical information. We will have a staff presentation that will follow that will explain a public release document that's about 35 pages long that will be released. It will be up on the website. It will give members of the public a context to read through in a fuller way exactly how we're fleshing out development of the plan and what the plan will look like. And it will include specific links to all the documents as we release them. So that will be an easy way for you to read through, keep track of where we are, and immediately access the documents. And that's separate from any other access you might get through our website for just going directly to any released item. So all in all, I want to, Mr. Chairman, thank the staff for the tremendous work that they've put in to make these dozens of items ready for release. And we feel that this will meaningfully move us forward to the next milestone in development of the plan.
Committee reports, I guess the only committee that's met since our last meeting is the Plan Development Committee, which we mentioned met this morning, and much of what we discussed is what Dante just said about the
John, could you speak a little closer to the mic?
Yep. The Plan Development Committee, much of our discussion this morning was about the the release of this technical information, which we will be discussing in a moment. The other item we discussed was, as Plan Development Committee, we approved to send on to Budget Committee a recommendation to put out a request for qualifications for three types of technical expertise that are needed to prepare the draft and final regional master plan. An architectural design firm that would help prepare drawing the sketches to visualize some of the policies that would be included in the plan, a design production firm, and a geographic information system map production firm that would help just with the physical production of the plan. So all of those are substantively approved by the Plan Development Committee, but now we'll go to the Budget Committee. But they are included in the list of contracts, potential contracts we had as the council approved some time ago. And I guess that was the only other thing discussed at that committee meeting. We point out on the agenda that there's a 10th item on the agenda, consideration of grants to municipalities and counties. We do not have any grants to consider, so that is not there. So the only remaining items, not that they are small by any means, are public comments and the consideration of this release of preliminary data. And I think what we should do is have Steve present, do the presentation first, and then we can get to the resolution and the discussion of it.
No, we have two demonstrations that will utilize our website access to illustrate to the council how information will be made available, and then to demonstrate the delivery system of data through our new online service so that we can go live with both of those applications following this council meeting. But there, before we go, there is a consideration for a resolution for consideration by council that approves release of information, technical information that will become the basis of the plan. In your packages are several pieces. First and foremost is a technical release report that includes a variety of imagery that will be released over the coming weeks. Most notably in that is a report that describes the framework of the regional master plan and how each of the release elements fit within that framework. So that rather than just put information out there in the absence of context, the website is going to be redesigned so that an individual that's interested in the subject will know what release information is available related to that subject and where that release information fits within the overall structure of the plan, so that the information is put into context, the public will have an understanding of how that information will inform the plan, and where the elements of the plan, what the structure of the plan, constantly reinforcing the structure of the plan, so the public is more comfortable as we start advancing in plan development. We are seeking today approval from the council to release that document. We do have additional copies here that, if the council agrees, we can provide to the public today, and that we would post that on the website and provide that information. There are two examples of release information that are in your packages. One relates to historic resources inventory. The other relates to contaminated sites inventory. Each of the subject matters of the technical reports that will be released on the web will be standalone. So one report will deal with one subject matter. It will be linked within the appropriate context of the overall structure of the plan, and it will deal with that subject matter only. They are merely a report on the status of the science that will help to inform subsequent policy decisions. They are not policy recommendations. They do not speak to how that information will inform the policy decisions. That is a subsequent step in plan development and will be a subject of discussion at subsequent council and committee meetings. The general framework of the report is pretty much consistent with the original scoping document that we reviewed with council. There's two exceptions to that. We made one revision and change. We made one revision and change that incorporates the transportation component into the smart growth component. Initially, The general structure of the plan is built upon six components, ranging from resource assessments, smart growth, transportation, coordination consistency, local participation, and finance. Based upon a lot of comments that we received, particularly from our tax and from our agency partners, the recommendation was made, and we concur, that we incorporate transportation and smart growth together. So the structure of the plan has been modified to incorporate those as a matter of efficiency and clarity without compromising the intent and scope. Secondly, the structural change was to move historic resources and scenic resources from resource assessment to the smart growth component, both because the smart growth component talks about design standards and resource protection standards, how local land use ordinances can be implemented to address resource protection goals. And the historic resources and scenic resources are better served, the protection of those resources are better served through those standards and in context within the smart growth component. There are three elements to the plan, as we've discussed. Our policy guidance element, which is the policy statement, an executive summary. It would be targeted at municipal officials to understand what the plan is, what it means. The technical documentation, which is the technical basis covering a variety of subject materials, is the heavy science, the data, and the information that informs those policies. And then finally, the implementation framework, which is how do you implement the plan at a local municipal level. It will be highlighted by the land use capability map, which is going to be structured around an overlay district zoning concept that would allow municipalities to implement that locally. If you go through the document, it walks you through each of those major components and each of what we call the elements of the plan: water resource management, ecosystem management, historic protection, recreation, smart growth, regional development and design, transfer development rights program are all basic elements of the plan. And it walks through how each of those elements will inform the components, which will ultimately inform the plan that will be provided in draft. And it provides an explanation of each of the technical analysis that's ongoing and how that technical analysis will ultimately inform the overall development of the plan, and then consequently what the technical releases that we're doing, the technical information, and where that fits into that structure. So given the complexity of this, it was our desire to put it in narrative form so that people will understand how this information will inform overall, ultimately, the development of the plan and how all the pieces will fit together. With that, I'd like to just ask Matt if he could just give a demonstration of how the public will be able to access this information through the web and what type of information will be available. Matt, if you could. So, what's that? Yeah, sure. So we're creating a link on the website that will allow someone to go in and get go into the RMP structure and get updates on information that's being released. So, Matt, if you could just describe that link.
Sure. In the top right-hand corner, you see Master Plan Public Release. If you click on it.
So this is a temporary framework. Ultimately, all of the narrative in the on the website will be the same narrative that's available in the technical, in the release document, with all the links linking it to the respective sections and the supporting technical reports. So this just illustrates how that will be accomplished with the examples that we're going to post immediately upon council approval. And why don't you take us to one? To go to the contaminated areas one. It provides a description of what the release is, provides links to documents, maps, and tables. Why don't you click on the document link?
There's only the map right now.
Okay. Do we have a document up on the text? That's it. So there, everything's in PDF format. It is a static. Ultimately, we will release and provide information. The second demonstration is how we will provide more spatially or geographic information system data to the public on a lot basis and ultimately on a municipal basis. So this is a map. It's a PDF format. It will take some time to upload. And hopefully it's going to work.
It tells you the status here.
Okay. Now, on some of the, all of the reports have both tabular and illustrative supporting documents. There are some, Roger, what are we working on? 60 plus, ultimately with our contractors, it'll be over 100. Figures that will illustrate the outputs of the data that will also be included in the technical reports. So this is one illustration. We provided a series of examples in your packages today. This is one that supports the identifies the distribution of contaminated sites within the region. That information will be important to inform policy decisions with regard to potential areas for that need remediation, potential areas for redevelopment or restoration, potential influences on what and where potable water supplies are needed and what water supplies are available to future development. Matt? Additionally on it will be the technical memorandums themselves.
The report.
Okay, this is the report that summarizes all the releases.
This is the document Steve has been describing that will have the interactive links in it. This is about 35 pages worth of text, and as you go through each, you'll have the links to go to the documents that are samples today, and then as we roll out in the next couple weeks, there'll be more and more samples and effects of more and more released documents.
It's working. It's, some of the images take time to download. But.
So this framework of the plan, it just go down into the text. Ultimately, this will become our web content material. And then the blue lines illustrate links. So in this case, this is an introduction to the regional master plan. If you were to click on that link, it would take you to the next relevant section. Just go down, which is the structure of the regional master plan, illustrations which demonstrate that structure. Keep going down. So within the structure of the regional master plan, there's the three major elements and how those elements inform one another. Again, blue indicates links. Go ahead down. The links would link you to the structure. Within the first, the policy guidance element are the five major components. If you were to click on one of those components, go scroll down to resource assessment component. Each of the technical analyses that are available are linked, explains the land use capability map. The concepts of overlay zones, how the regional master plan will be implemented, the conformance process, what municipalities and counties will have to go through in order to come into conformance with the regional master plan. Keep going there. And then ultimately the substance of the plan, in this case the components, the resource assessment, the statutory responsibility, the major frameworks, water, eco, farmland, sustainable forestry and agriculture, land preservation. There will be links provided to each of those elements explaining what they are and what the program element frameworks are, such as in this case, water resources at water capacity, water quality, water supply. If you hit on each of those subject matters, go ahead, it would take you down to, in this case, water use and basin characteristics, right there, Matt. Uh-huh. The second one is surface, water supply there, and then it gives the elements that are available. So you can go in and research the regional master plan structure elements, have an understanding of what it's trying to do, and then go to the supporting data. And as right there, Matt, that's good. So as information is available, we will create a link on the website that will allow you to understand where it, what element of the plan it's informing, and then you can get the additional information. So if you were to click on these links, it would take you to those figures and technical documents, examples of which are in your packages, and we'll keep adding information. So this is, will allow for a very live, real-time application that we could deliver information to the public in a manner that allows them to stay as up-to-date on development of the regional master plan, including access to all the technical analyses, reports, as much as they want. The public wants to get involved, they can get involved, they will be informed, and they can actively and productively participate.
Yeah, this is a very comprehensive document. I think members of the public will find it really helpful. Matt, on our temporary site, do we have that basin stress map?
It's actually here.
You click on that if you would, because I'd like Steve to talk through it. I mean, the reason I want us to focus on this for just 1 second is to give you a sense of how the data that we're releasing will start to inform the kinds of questions that folks want to raise, and obviously the issues that the council will address. And one of them has to do with water availability. And so in this particular map, this, which was developed by USGS, we can begin to see the comparison between water that's available in areas and the amount of human consumption that's there based on existing allocations of water. And when you compare the two, you begin to see which areas are already stressed based on the amount of water and the amount of water that's needed. And that's exactly the kind of analysis that this council will go through in many other resource areas, to try to look at what's there, what do we need, and what do we do about it. So this is just one example. Steve, if you wanted to add some.
Yeah, the determining available water is a two-step process. The first step is estimating capacity of the system. We've gone through an extraordinarily comprehensive exercise of estimating that capacity based upon a series of what's called flow statistics that looks at the flows and streams which receive the majority of that flow from flow from groundwater resources, what's known as base flow. And the relationship or maintenance of base flow during low flow conditions is critical to maintaining the ecological integrity of our waterways, and the results of excessive withdrawals of groundwater within that contributing drainage area compromises our ability to maintain that those ecological functions. So what we've done is developed a very comprehensive method of estimating capacity that could be expressed at a HUC 14 level. HUC stands for Hydrologic Unit Codes. It is the smallest drainage area delineation that we currently have available. We're taking steps to even refine that as next iterations of the plan to a much more refined level. But the first plan iteration will express capacity at a HUC 14 level. This illustrates the comparison between our existing uses of water and available capacity. The darker the green, the more stressed the system. So where our existing uses are straining available capacity, the policy decisions the council will have to make subsequently using a lot of this data is to what extent is portions of that capacity available for future human consumption. And that will be informed based upon a variety of conditions and characteristics and criteria, but generally speaking, those in areas in dark green are overstressed. They are currently approaching the point where they are at or exceed the maximum capacity of the water supply. So there is going to be virtually very limited availability for future use. Those that are in lighter shades of green have available capacity. The question is, to what extent will that be made available for human consumptive use, and for what extent that needs to be retained within the system for ecological integrity. And those are the types of policy decisions. And this is how data will be expressed in a lot of cases. The development of the land use capability map requires that we establish zones, hard lines on the ground that could be incorporated in municipal land use planning context. This starts to give you an illustration of how the data will inform delineation of those boundary lines. And this is just one example. There are dozens and dozens of criteria that will inform that map. Capacity is just one.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask a question. Steve, what we're looking at here and the analysis that we're doing here through the study is something that has not been done before. Is that correct?
I would argue at this level of complexity, no. Many of the individual elements
have existed separately.
Yes.
But they've never been compiled.
Not comprehensive.
Integrating all this resource information is extraordinarily complex, and I'm very grateful and proud of our staff and their ability to not only advance it, but not lose sight of that complexity.
The reason I mention that is I want to make the relationship between what we're dealing with here, which is the Highlands Water Protection and Planning Act. And we are the Highlands Water Protection and Planning Council, not just the Highlands Council. We have the tool name. And this is the very basis for what we are trying to accomplish, which is the understanding of what water is available and what the quality of that water is and its effect on human populations as we go forward. So this is really the nut, I believe, of what we're trying to work on here. And I just want to make that point again. I also want to reiterate what I think you alluded to, which is this is raw data. Not only has it not been evaluated or commented upon, but it has no conclusions attached to it. It's making no recommendations, I think you said. And I think that's appropriate at this point. Let's just see what we have available before we decide what we're going to do about it or what we're going to recommend regarding it. So I just want to make those 2 points clear.
And if I may add, what you will notice in that one illustration, there's no political boundaries. What's driving the decision and what is at the premise of regional planning is it's resource driven. So we look in this case at a drainage area, a resource feature that is necessary to assess the capacity of that resource to support existing and future development and to support to sustain human population and meet human needs. But it can be applied at a municipal level, but what it does is encourage municipalities to plan locally based upon a better understanding of what the regional implications are in those land use decisions. And that illustrates what I think the council is committed to in terms of a blind to the line concept, is where informing the plan based upon resource values that are not politically divided. And that's very important.
All the links in that report, I mean, all the links are not yet, don't go anywhere for the most part.
Correct.
So is there a way to indicate in the report which ones are active and which ones aren't?
Yeah, we turn the text from black to blue. A blue would indicate a live link. A black would indicate there is no link.
Forthcoming.
Yes.
Forthcoming link.
So we just create the structure, and as we add, we turn links blue.
Mr. Chairman, then the other demonstration we wanted to do was of the in-out vertices program. And Roger's returning.
This is reports data. The other issue is how do we deliver information to the end user, the property owner, the municipal official, in a way that is not so burdensome, that is not embedded in volumes and volumes of paperwork and volumes of tables and figures. So we're developing another approach to deliver information through via our website. There's two target audiences. We're only dealing with one right now. Those target audiences are municipal and county planning officials and property owners. The application we're developing right now is targeted at property owners. It delivers information with respect to the effect of the plan on their property. Examples would be, are you in the preservation area or not? What zone are you in, and what are the standards that relate to that zone? We're also looking at this type of application to implement our TDR program. So a property owner could simply type in their address and get information on whether or not they're entitled to TDR credits and what the estimate of credits would be. That's in the future. We've created the framework and the delivery system and what we call our in-out application. And Roger is just going to illustrate how that works to deliver information in the plan to interested members of the public, particularly targeted our stakeholders, our property owner stakeholders right now.
In the interest to, like Steve probably had said before I was here, in the interest to respond to community and to the general public asking whether or not they are in or out of the preservation area, we've developed this in-out application. Very simple tool based on a variety of different technologies to allow the public at large to go in, type in their address, or do various types of searches to see whether or not they are in or out of the preservation area. Sorry. It'll be linked to our website from the front page, and as soon as you click the link, you're brought to this disclaimer page in which there's a number of legal mumbo-jumbo that you got to read and accept the terms of agreement. Basically, you're not going to be malicious with any of this information. So if you click agree, it'll bring you to the in-out application. If you disagree, simply the window closes and you're back to start. I don't know what that means.
I right. need to agree.
Yes. So as the council has seen before and the committee has seen before, it's based on Google Maps technology. The information that you see here is specific to the Highlands. It delineates the Highlands planning area and preservation area. There are several ways to search for information, zoom in, zoom out. If you're familiar with Google Maps, you've already learned all the tools you need to know to find your property. So you can pan back and forth, you can zoom in onto a particular area. One thing that you may want to do is, in order to improve speed, we have automatically turned off layers as you zoom in and zoom out. So just there's a button up here showing you to click on all the layers, which will bring up all the layers. You can go back to the default map. To search for your site for any particular property, first thing you need to do is punch in the municipality that you're interested in. So we'll go to Chester. Okay. So it automatically takes you right to the Chester Township border.
Just show the hybrid map.
Yes. If we click on hybrid, there are several different types of visualizations we have, both the vector-based map, which you just saw, a satellite image with this orthophotography, or a hybrid, which includes both. So put in your township. We're going to pick 100 North Road. And we click search, and everybody crosses your fingers. I'm sorry. There we are. All right, fantastic. A list will drop down with all the positive matches. If you click on any one of them, it'll zoom into that particular parcel. On the right-hand side, it'll show you just a little bit of information about that parcel. And it'll also tell you whether or not you're in or out of the Highlands planning or preservation area. So in this particular case, this parcel is in the planning area. And it's outlined in red. It's a little bit brighter on the screen. The screen's a little strange with colors. The other way of searching is you can simply click on a parcel, any area, and receive that information for that block and lot.
And then what Roger just hit on, one of the things that's different, you actually, this is lot and block information, which is something that has not been available through any of the other searches, even the other departmental searches to look at properties. So this goes to another level, and it assists in the certainty of of the identification of whether you're in or out.
And then what this delivers right now is a very simple set of lot conditions. You're in the, are you in the preservation or planning area, the zone, the municipality? That list on the right can be expanded as more information is available at a lot block level. It could define the zone. It could provide a link to the standards to the, that apply to that zone. And ultimately, we're talking about now and developing a similar type of application that would work at the municipal level, that would target our municipal stakeholders and provide that information in a manner that would be beneficial to environmental commissions, planning boards, zoning boards, in getting access to GIS data without having to be GIS proficient and without having to have GIS capabilities in your town.
And this is where, this is the benefit of all that work that the council did initially to pull together a parcel-based map for the entire Highlands region, now empowers us to come out with tools like this that are much more powerful than any other kind of search tool that's been out there before looking at properties. And it's the same data that will inform the plan, same data that is available for searching. And so, it, as Steve is correctly pointing out, this becomes a wonderful tool not only for state agencies like ours, but counties and municipalities. And so we can all then truly be part of a regional planning process because we're all now armed with really great data in an effective way.
And then let me give an illustration back to that USGS map that illustrated water capacity. That zone can be linked or expressed at a lot block level. You can then, as information becomes available on the right side, you're within a constrained water availability zone. You could link on that. It will take you back to the USGS map if you want to get the information that supported that determination for that particular area. So using this type of technology, the type of intelligence that could be built into the technology, we are able to link this complex, diverse science and information that goes into developing and informing the regional master plan. So Joe, Roger and his staff have done an extraordinary job at pulling this together, and Matt is doing an extraordinary job at developing the web base that allows that information to be delivered to the public. And we're very proud of both of them and their staff.
In terms of the status, Mr. Chairman, we're ready to go live with this to the public at this point. The council as well.
Okay. Council members have questions for?
It's terrific.
Yes,
great resource.
What is the photographic imagery is from Google? Aerial photographs.
It's actually. The engine right now is Google, just for purposes of developing the application. The photo imagery is actually NJDG, photo author quads. It's all public information that's in the public realm. We're working on hardware issues, and ultimately, although we're using the Google platform right now, we're going to take that and develop it on our own server using our own imagery. Right now, if you zoom out using the Google platform, we could go to California. I could show you the Eiffel Tower if anybody's interested. But we want to focus the application to only the Highlands region, ultimately. And we're still working on that.
But to the extent DEP updates the aerial photography, that would just be could be updated here.
Yeah, you just replace the file, yes.
This is old data now, is that right, Steve?
This is 2002 aerial photography. Our baseline year for the plan is 2002. There is plans to do another overflight of the state, I think, watch 2007. And then that would then inform the next iteration of the plan along with data that's provided by municipal and county partners during conformance. And we will update this as new information becomes available.
I'd just like to comment on the staff work here. I think someone asked me yesterday about the underlying data or what you're going to be seeing up here, and we discussed that here this morning. But how do you verify that underlying data? This is impossible, I think, for most people to do. We have relied and continue to rely on the staff work to tell us that this data is accurate and it's verifiable and that it is presented in an accurate manner. And I think this is a credit to the hiring policies of this council that we have chosen to work here, people who are extremely well qualified and in whom we place a great deal of confidence to do this kind of work for us. I think that underlying confidence that we have and the hiring practices that we have engaged in are extremely beneficial, and the fruit is shown right here on the screen and will be in the future as well.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think also by making it public, to the extent there are any errors in this, or people can point them out. Members of the council.
Although there is a disclaimer on it.
Yes. Will not be held responsible.
That was true. If you were in one move, they were able to pat them on the back and kind of cover our behinds at the same time.
Right. Well, thank you. We will continue to discuss this now. We have a draft resolution in the packet. Would someone like to introduce the resolution?
I'll introduce the resolution. Second.
But I think a number of people have said this in different ways about this is factual information, not opinion, not policy, is what we're putting out here. And it's a quote from the late senator from New York, Daniel Patrick Moynihan, who said, "Everyone is entitled to their own opinion, but they're not entitled to their own facts." So that's what we are trying to do here, is get the facts up here. Members of the council have comments on the resolution? Or?
Mr. Chairman, I would just like to say that, I follow up with what Mr. Schreier said, in that the staff has done a tremendous job in pulling together, a lot of data and doing their best to evaluate and make it correct. And one of the things that we've always said, that the integrity of the RMP is going to be based on the science and that we get it right. So in releasing these various documents, it's the hope of the council, I believe, that the various stakeholders will review these, will review them carefully, and provide comment back if there are any updates that you feel are appropriate.
I'd like to suggest one amendment to the resolution. The final whereas has a phrase in it that says, "Whereas the data and information have not been reviewed by the appropriate Highlands Council Committee." I guess that's somewhat gratuitous since the entire council is reviewing.
I'll support that amendment.
Ms. Janice, is the second review?
You're saying take out "have not been reviewed"?
Yeah.
Take out the whole word?
No, take out just the phrase "have not been reviewed." So it would read, "Whereas the data and information to be released on June 22nd, 2006 are in draft form and are subject to change based upon Highland Council member input and input from the public." Other comments? Are there public comments specifically on this resolution? We'll have two public comment periods. So after we resolve what we're doing with this resolution, we'll have an open public comment period. Are there comments on this resolution? Yes.
My name is Deborah Post, and right after the Highlands Act was passed, I was pointed to something called the New Jersey IMAP on the internet. Which I immediately went to. I don't know exactly what it is, njimap.com. It's on the New Jersey site. And I could put in my block and lot, and it would pull up exactly where I was, and it would show me whether I was in the Highlands or not. I could hit Zoom, and it would bring up the photography of my property. So I guess my comment is I'm very interested in how this process is different than the IMAP, which was in existence literally before the Highlands Act was passed, and I believe is backed up by a lot of scientific data. Thank you.
Yeah, the IMAP is not interactive at the lot block level, and that's a distinction. IMAP is DEP, developed an application whereby you can obtain GIS information. It's a little bit different because each of the GIS data covers stand independently. It doesn't inform the variety of resource values that are available on a lot block level. So we're trying to provide information that is specific to lot block. It's a different type of application. The information available on IMAP is data that's currently available to the public that has been developed through years of compilation of DEP. Some of that is information that's informing the regional master plan. Much of the data that's being developed as part of the regional master plan doesn't currently exist on IMAP.
I'd just like to respond by saying it took me all of 5 minutes to find my block lot, maybe by address, on the IMAP right after the Highlands Act was passed.
Mr. Chairman, the other thing to point out in terms of ease of use is we got a lot of complaints from folks who weren't able to find things on IMAP, and part of it may have been because it's not actually parcel-based. You could put in parcel information, and it may tell you whether you are, but it doesn't identify your parcel. And one of the things we wanted to make sure was that we had more ease of use. And so in addition to having additional powers, as you've described, we think it'll give a better ability of folks to get a quick determination.
I assume also this gives a basis, you can build from this to incorporate the eventual policies in the master plan, which you couldn't do with IMAP. So those can be superimposed on this. So this is the foundation on which the plan will be built.
Yes.
Mr. Chairman and council members, my name is Eric Stiles. I'm Vice President for Conservation at New Jersey Audubon Society and reside in Bernardsville. I just want to applaud the staff for making a system that's so readily available and transparent that can be added to as a good foundation for making those decisions. I think good decisions have to be informed through a transparent process that is well-formed based upon the best available science. I commend Councilman Schreier for advocating for the best available information, knowing that we can never have perfect be the enemy of good. And what we have here is very good information, the best available at this regional level at any entity, whether it's the Adirondacks, Cape Cod. My understanding is they still don't have specific lot and block information. So commend the council for moving forward on this important tool. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is David Chope. I live in Long Valley, and we just had another presentation of water jive talk. The simple fact of the matter is, first I would like to correct Mr. DePiro. It's the New Jersey Water Supply Authority. It's not the New Jersey Water Supply Commission or anything else. They were formed to
North Jersey.
I'm sorry.
The Water Supply Commission. It's not the one in Clinton.
In Clinton. Well, in any case, what has been presented is the typical story where the majority of the water, at least from this neck of the woods, is exported. Exported to certain places like golf courses. It's exported to for-profit water companies where it's sold down in the white areas that nobody wants to talk about. But they do exist. They are the consumers of the water that originates here. They pay precious little for it because they buy it at cost from the Water Supply Authority, and the cost does not consider the diminution of land value that is necessary to supply this flow of water. I consider, and I've said it before, I consider the Highlands area. This whole plan is nothing more than a colonization of this area for the benefit of the colonizing powers. And if you want to see where they are, just look at the white areas of the map. Just look at where the water flows. And let me conclude by saying that what that makes you is the colonial authority. That's your job.
My name's Hank Klump, and I'm a farmer in Tewksbury. One of the things is it's amazing to see Aridius data and all that stuff. I mean, I know our farm, and, I don't need the data, as you can see. You know, but I've got a question for you. If the data is used scientifically rather than politically, would it be able which is a fact, that our farm in the original draft was not in the Highlands. It was put in politically after. So with the same token of what you people are doing here to designate the water and so forth and so on, you're also designating maybe our farm shouldn't be in it. Do you understand what I'm saying? I don't know whether that, but I mean, you're using the science now. And, you know, like in June, this thing was supposed to be done, and there was no way. But what I'm saying is you got the map, let's give the farmers a break that don't belong in this thing and get us out of it. I mean, it's a two-way street. I think that should be, I mean, we don't belong in it. One side of the road isn't in it, and we're in it. I mean, you tell me how the road divides it. I mean, this is ludicrous. We don't put any water in the Spruce Run around Valley either. I mean, so we don't belong in it, and we were put in for political reasons, and that's the worst scenario. So that's about it. Thank you.
Other questions or comments on this resolution? Other council member comments? A vote? I guess somebody? You're speaking on this resolution?
Just comments in general.
We'll get to that in a little while. Thanks. All those in favor of the resolution?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstentions? Okay. Passes. Are there any other matters from council members before we get to public comments? General public comments? Okay. Now you can come up.
Morning. My name is Mark Skoda. I own a 19-acre piece of abandoned quarry in Mount Olive Township, Morris County, New Jersey. Last fall, I applied to the DEP for an exemption and was rejected on the basis that I didn't fit any of the 17 criteria. My site is unique in that not allowing me to develop the site would actually do the opposite of what the Highlands Act was created to do, and that is to preserve the underground aquifers. Water just passes right over my site because it's pretty much 100% impervious. My property is located on a dead-end street. It is surrounded by a regional shopping center, by industrial buildings, and by the Morris County Transfer Station. The delineation line of the Highlands goes right down the center of Gold Mine Road, where my property is located. I have a piece on the northbound side, which is undevelopable. I have a piece on the south side, where my office is now, which actually has wetlands in the back. All I would ask is that the council take a common sense approach and try to pull out areas like mine that I consider very unique that really the citizens of New Jersey should not have to pay for. It's prime industrial property. I brought along a few photos if anybody wants to look at them. There's nothing that's even organic on my piece of property. Just the delineation line happened to go down the street. I was kind of caught on the wrong side of the road, and everyone's building around me. I'm sort of landlocked there. And that's about it. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh,
sure. You pass these around. I have some before and afters. It was actually a pretty scary sight in that. Here there was a rock cliff that I had to fill in because I built a development behind there and kids could drive, you know, motorcycles off and that kind of stuff. I'll pass these around, some current and older ones.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I should have said this at the outset, but we asked for those who haven't been made here before that you limit your comments to 3 minutes and we don't get to a deep take on this.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Paul Christie. I'm the Executive Director of the Coalition for Affordable Housing and the Environment. And our members came together around the belief that through sound planning, New Jersey can protect its environment, revitalize its communities, and address the affordable housing needs of its citizens. Clearly, to meet the goals of the Act, you're going to have to establish limits on growth. And you're not going to be able to accomplish that goal if affordable housing is an add-on or is an afterthought. And you're going to have, through I think what will be up on the site, opportunities to integrate the constitutional obligation to provide affordable housing opportunities into the RMP. The Smart Growth Network, Smart Growth America, note the importance of affordable housing and smart growth strategies. And so we hope that the smart growth component of the RMP does as well. The RMP envisions an implementation framework, and part of that implementation framework should include petitioning COA for substantive certification. Any lower standard will not include the legal protection from builder's remedy litigation and ancillary additional growth that a successful suit could bring. I'll note that at the Technical Advisory Committee charrette, a number of the work groups, including those who are not interested, who are not focused on housing, noted the need to both provide affordable housing and eliminate the possibility of builder's remedy litigation. The land use capability map should include opportunities for affordable housing, and where it creates overlay zones, those zones should, where environmentally appropriate, provide zoning mechanisms to address affordable housing obligations. It shouldn't be so prescriptive that a municipality can't develop and implement a better plan. But at the same time, it should set the bar. And it should, because if it doesn't, someone else will. It risks having someone else identify affordable housing opportunities to address those obligations. And we've seen recently the effects of inaction in the Meadowlands, where both municipalities and the state ignored the Constitution. A judge enforced it. And earlier this month, you all had concerns and saw the difficulty in Alpha of trying to right past wrongs. And so proactivity is really what we think is going to be the success. And we think that that'll be best served if the plan incorporates affordable housing obligations into it up front. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Members of Council, my name is Ron Morgan. I'm the attorney for Alpha 519. There was a referral from DEP under a court order to the Highlands Council for a recommendation as to the inclusion of the entirety of the Alpha 519 affordable housing parcel in an expanded sewer service area. We were not aware that this was advertised for public for public comment. Therefore, we did not come to the meeting. We subsequently received a copy of the resolution and some of the objection letters that were received. And there was a lot of misinformation, I'm afraid, and we're here to kind of respond to that. I would point out that I have my engineer here, Jim Began from Mazur Consulting, and also the Superior Court has appointed a sanitary consultant, Jim Coe, and Jim is here also. Jim, would you come up, please?
I don't remember at the beginning of the meeting when I announced we're not going to send that letter, the letter on Alpha that the council had approved at the last meeting.
No. Rather than have me kind of go over this on behalf of, as an advocate, I'd like to have Jim as the impartial expert for the court just to highlight the facts for you. I have supplied Tom Borden and Mr. DePiro with a comprehensive brief which sets forth all the facts, but I think it's better if it comes from Jim.
Mr. Chairman, we're still in the
agreement
for this portion of the public meeting. I think the council is very interested to hear what you have to offer on this matter that came up at the last meeting. But I'm not sure that if this is going to take more than 3 minutes, this is the best time for you to make the best case.
I'm trying to figure out the best way to do that. The public comment period is the last part of the act of the meeting. I'm not sure whether some of the staff and members would be able to sit down with you guys in a few minutes after the council.
We did have a chance to chat just before, Mr. Chairman, and the bottom line was they wanted to have a moment to talk to us about whether we intended to send in a follow-up letter, and I'd indicated that the council had said what it could for the application, given the fact that we don't have a regional master plan, and I think the nature of the follow-up was they wanted to make sure the council knew that the court may expect something further, given that the Department of Environmental Protection may not be acting in consequence. So, in short, I would be willing to meet with them on it. They already told me the gravamen. I committed that I would talk to DEP as to the nature. Overall, I said that obviously the council has no intention of frustrating the court nor anyone else in terms of the application. We had attempted to say our piece, and if further clarification was needed, I would talk to members about it. So I could do that follow-up and get back to you or to the appropriate committee if you wish.
Yeah, one of the reasons I was going to have Mr. Coe speak is because of the three-minute rule. I know you don't want to hear from me, but I thought you should hear from the court's master. So how are we going to handle this?
Maybe if you go to address the court's issues, and then I'd be happy to meet with you, and we'll take things back to the council members subsequently.
Jim, why don't you just give them a recap?
Sure. I became involved in this early last year. Appointed by the court, resulted in an administrative consent order where Phillipsburg, or a court order where Phillipsburg agreed to redo their master plan but allowed this project to go forward with a site-specific amendment to the wastewater management plan. On the verge, that was advertised by DEP, was about to be adopted by DEP, I understood, through various phone conversations and emails, and at that point DEP decided that they needed a recommendation from this body. Which they, after some period, finally got a letter to you asking for that. And simultaneously, there was a status meeting with the judge. The judge saw the issue between the DEP and the Highland Council, and there was a subsequent court order which requested that the Highland Council act within 30 days of receiving that request and directed me to do what I could to nudge everybody along. Since then, I've had a number of conversations with Tom Borden, a number of conversations with DEP. DEP has told me that they have not accepted your letter as a recommendation. I've attempted to get them to see it as a recommendation because it did recommend that in taking action that DEP review the comments that were received as part of your notice. But they also see within that you have not had time to act, and I sense a hesitancy on DEP to act, given that you've told them that you haven't had time yet and they're anticipating more. Okay, I believe DEP would take action if they got something from the Highland Council that would say perhaps that you have no objection to DEP taking action to approve this. I'm not sure you're prepared to say that. I'm suggesting you do that. But they are expecting more from you. And in the meantime, the applicant has submitted an application for approval of a sewer system. We did that in anticipation of getting the wastewater management plan approved. We've now gone through 90 days plus an additional 30-day extension on July 20th. If the plan has not been approved, that application will be denied, at which point we'll have to start the application for the sewers all over again. So that's the basis for hoping to come to you today, trying to perhaps have the council direct your staff to direct another letter to DEP, further explaining your position if you're prepared to do that.
It was, the council can't take a vote on this matter today. It was, I think, all of our expectation that this was the council's final comment on that request for information, and we expected the DEP to then take action. We actually felt appropriate after considering the public comments we recommended they consider. We can communicate that to the DEP if that's helpful.
I think it would be.
Yeah, I would also like to point out that this is not a builder's remedy parcel. Pohatcon designated this as Alpha designated the property as its sole Mount Laurel compliance parcel in 1995 and recognized at that point that it needed to file a WIMP amendment to place the entirety of the property in a sewer service area. In fact, the WIMP amendment application was prepared as of 1995. The community never filed it. They then filed with COA for substantive certification, and COA directed them to file it. They never followed through.
Mr. Chairman, I don't think we should be going into the substance of the issue. I think that we dealt with this as a council at the last meeting, and I really don't think the substance of the issue is appropriate here today.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming in. We all appreciate you coming in. I would suggest that you talk to Dante. Basically what we did as a council was say we didn't have time to get into the substance, and we therefore said what we said to DEP with the expectation they would then act, so we can communicate that.
Well, in conclusion, and I won't get into the substance, I just want to advise the council that the New Jersey Council on Affordable Housing's executive director is very interested in making sure that this goes through, and she's appointed her staff as a permit facilitator, just like the Superior Court has appointed Jim to as a permit facilitator to make sure that the requisite permits are in hand. The project does have preliminary and final local and county approval and is ready to move forward as soon as we get into the sewer line. Yep.
Thank you very
much. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, for informational purposes, I understand that COA has sent us a letter, which I will take a look at, and we will send, we'll provide a staff recommendation at the appropriate committee that handled ALPHA last time. And,
but it does sound like the timing is critical to them.
We will find out.
That their deadline is now before the next council meeting.
My verbal is an abridged version of the written comments that I'm leaving. Thank you. My name is Sylvia Kovacs. I'm with the Warren County Environmental Commission. And the Warren County Environmental Commission thanks this council again for the open public process with which it conducts its business and the opportunity to address this council with our thoughts and concerns. I refer now to the council's decision with regard to the proposed amendment to the Upper Delaware Water Quality Management Plan, Alpha 519 LLC and Alpha Borough. It is our understanding that the council itself had requested to be a part of the process wherein DEP reviews WQMPs and amendments, and we're grateful to see that the DEP, in fact, did honor the council's request. We were therefore disappointed in the council's action in adopting Resolution 2006-24. I know that there are some who believe that unless you have either formal education or work experience in these matters, that you cannot be considered an expert. However, you don't need to be Isaac Newton to recognize gravity. There are people in the local communities with local knowledge that bring a wealth of on-the-ground background that cannot be overstated. I sit on the Warren County Environmental Commission's Patcong Valley Superfund Site Subcommittee, and we are having ongoing contact with experts from the EPA. As for myself, I have my master's in environmental management, have worked in corporate within the Chemical Industries Ecology Administration function, dealing with chemical spills and emergency response. Having said that, I would like to take a moment to briefly address the one big issue that the Commission believes is of paramount importance here, groundwater contamination, and as a case in point, the Powhatan Valley Superfund site. The Powhat site at present is thought to be a plume at least 2 miles wide and 12 miles long. The EPA began its remedial investigation and feasibility study in the early 90s, and after years of testing, they estimate that there is at least 310 pounds of unremediated soil contaminated with VOCs leaching into the groundwater and generating approximately 1,000 gallons of groundwater contamination per year feeding the plume. The ongoing study has already detected contamination at the Franklin-Greenwich border. Present-day water tests required for realty transactions are bearing this out. We don't know the extent of the potential public health issue that this encompasses, but what we do know is that ALPHA and its environs are in the path of this contamination, if indeed it has not already been affected. We're not even talking about the several other sites that haven't even yet been studied. At the last meeting, testimony was given regarding proposed development in the ALPHA area already on the books. The numbers were in the 750 units range. After checking with the county's planning department, the number for the four municipalities drawing water from the same source is actually 1,638 lots with an estimated daily drawdown of 368,550 gallons per day based on the NJAC 714A-23 projected flow criteria. It is with these concerns in mind and with great dismay that the Warren County Environmental Commission again states for the record the disappointment we feel in the council's decision not to at least request of the judge to have a few months' reprieve so as to have the data and the opportunity to address the ALPHA's WQMP amendment. There was a strong call from the public to have gone back to the DEP and the judge and asked for the opportunity to have the data whereby such input would have been possible.
I had to cut you off. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Have you seen
those rates? Yes, I have.
Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Richard Longo. My wife and I own property in the preservation area. There have been numerous discussions and statements made at these council meetings and in the press about the harm to the landowners in the preservation area regarding the loss of their property values. You, the Highlands Council, and politicians who voted for this law have stated publicly that there are provisions in the Act to monetarily compensate the landowners who have been harmed. There's no scientific or factual evidence to support the enactment of this law. basically it was nothing but politics. At your council meeting on June 1st, 2006, DEP Commissioner Ms. Lisa Jackson addressed the council to submit to her department the names of landowners that have come forward seeking compensation as provided by the law. Please consider my request for such compensation immediately. You can mail a check to Richard and Jean Longo, 540 Powerville Road, Bruton Township, New Jersey. Thank you.
And just to clarify, your request for compensation was made to which program in state government?
No, Ms. Jackson was here at the...
No, but she said that anyone... She was talking about people who filed a request for compensation.
Okay.
So have you filed that request?
No, but I will. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and council members. Again, I'm Eric Stiles, Vice President for Conservation at New Jersey Audubon Society. And every time I look at the screen behind you, I feel like I'm on the Star Trek Enterprise, perhaps. Perhaps. I just wanted to talk about A Tale of Two Cities, my favorite Dickens novel from high school, probably the only one I enjoyed, and compare the Highlands and the regional master plan process to the state plan. When you look at the Highlands regional master plan, you're charged with a clear goal that's natural resource-based, which is to protect water, wildlife, plants, and forests. The plan is based upon natural resource data layers with very clear standards and benchmarks, such as protecting safe drinking water and endangered species. Again, a deterministic finding has to be made with no harm to these resources in both the DEP rules and the regional master plan. And it's also driven by actual capacity, not permitted capacity. Sewers that were permitted in the 60s, 70s, or 80s that had nothing to do with actual capacity, water allocation permits, et cetera. Let's look at the state plan. And we've had these same discussions with Commissioner Vasilevin and Commissioner Jackson and Tom Shea and Heather Howard. So this is, you know, we're running the same message around and hoping it sticks. The state plan has conflicting objectives, such as mandating growth while at the same time protecting our environs, with no clear direction on how you engage in conflict resolution when the two occur spatially. For example, you can have an area that has important surface water uptake, threatening endangered species, primary recharge areas, wellhead protection areas, which is a PA1. A number of groups, including New Jersey Audubon, have done that analysis. And where I'm going with this is the Highlands Council, New Jersey Audubon, is urging the Highlands Council to oppose approval of any plan endorsement measures, including Sussex County, which I don't blame for. They did the right thing in 2000. They started this process prior to the passage of the Act. However, the state plan has a very different process with a different set of mandates and outcomes than the regional master plan. I applaud Councilwoman Mimi Letts that said, the integrity of the regional master plan is based on science. The state plan has to consider science, be informed by science, but it doesn't have that same mandate. So I really urge you to work with the Office of Smart Growth, with Commissioner Vasilevin and Commissioner Jackson, the Governor's Office, to urge for those plan endorsement measures to not proceed for any municipality or county in the Planning or Preservation Act prior to the passage of the Regional Master Plan. You will, in essence, inoculate them and the same unintended consequences of affordable housing. If you do this, you're opening Pandora's box for having a conflict. And we want that transparency for the public. And if you have a county or municipal endorsed plan which runs counter to the findings of the regional master plan, you're going to have a very confused public, be sending a very confused signal. And we would also say that failure to ask for that is really abdication of the legislative intent, which is to protect these resources through a well-formed science base with clear benchmarks and standards. Thank you.
I have a question, Mr. Chairman. Not of you, but thank you for your comments. But Dante, you indicated that there's been an extension of the comment period in the council for the Sussex plan.
Yes.
And you said we'll do something in September.
Well, it sounded like that the line, what you should say.
It's got me thinking about it.
Yes. Well, a little of the background. We had learned that the county had submitted an application for plan endorsement, and we were exploring with them and with OSG exactly what the nature of that process would mean in light of two things. One was the timing of our data and our regional master plan, and secondly, what would an endorsement of a county plan or a regional plan by State Planning Commission mean with regard to towns' own individual endorsements and identification of centers and the like. And so there were a number of discussions. In terms of the timing of it, OSG, Office of Smart Growth, had asked us for comments by a quick turnaround time in a matter of days, which would have been Friday of that week. And so at that point, we pulled together a quick letter which would have pointed out some of the problems for us, jurisdictional issues, issues about the timing where we needed to have our science plugged into the process, and we're not quite there yet in terms of delivery of the science yet. In subsequent discussions with Eileen Swan, the director of OSG, it was apparent that there's some additional information that's going to be required, and so OSG extended our opportunity for comment. So we really haven't made a determination on whether we need to comment, and if so, to say what yet. The issues are the ones that Eric described and you and Chairman have described in terms of how we interact and how we make sure that anything that happens with the state plan is coordinated with what we're doing because of our necessary two jurisdictional responsibilities. So the current track is for us to continue our talks with Sussex and with Office of Smart Growth to figure out exactly what other additional information is required, what the timing is like, whether we can plug into that process in a meaningful way because of what that process is, so that our input can be material. Because if that's not able to happen, we do want to make sure that we don't prejudice ourselves in terms of developing the plan, and we don't prejudice towns to go through two processes where they have the cost and effort to go through a plan endorsement only to find in a matter of a short period of time later that the Highlands Regional Master Plan has found other constraints or issues that need to be resolved. We want to be fair to towns. So we're very hopeful that we'll have a meaningful process in the county. I think we'll work with us and we with them on trying to do this, but we're just not at a place where we can give a recommendation yet on how exactly we can handle it, but those are the crucial issues we're trying to handle.
What occurred to me listening to the last several comments is that I would hope that we're not in a place where if we don't provide comments by a certain date, that the assumption will be made at the State Planning Commission level that we were not interested in commenting.
Right. They're clear that that's not at all the case. We are very interested. The question is just what to do given the timing and the importance of the issues and the need of timing for the county, the need of timing for a state plan. We all have different schedules, and so how to meet those. But they're very clear that we're interested in the process and that silence is no acquiescence or objection either.
Okay, so we don't need to. Do you think we need to request that no action be taken until we can resolve this?
I don't think that's necessary given my conversation with Eileen Swan and with the staff. So I don't feel we're vulnerable in that regard. They know where we are, and I think there's plenty of opportunity for the council to consider how we approach this.
What might be helpful to go with that suggestion is that just you send a letter to Eileen Swan, just reiterating your understanding for meeting with her, so it's on the record.
That's fine.
I would appreciate that, to see that in writing. And also, I wonder, are there other instances where there's a plan
this is the only regional plan, the only county plan that's proposed that would be impacted by our own schedule. That is to say, all other ones clearly will happen for determination by OSG after our plan is adopted. There are potential that there are two other towns that are in the initial phase, but in my discussion with Eileen, it seems clear that they also will happen after the plan. So in terms of our own priorities, it's kind of like some of the projects that come up while we're developing the plan, we have to figure out what to do. This seems to be the only one where we will have this timing issue that we're not quite done with the plan, or may not be quite far enough along.
And it seems like it really would be a good idea to put it in writing, and then folks would know where we stand on that type of issue.
Yeah, it depends on what it is that we're putting in the letter, and this is why we held off initially, because we obviously don't want to be adversarial. At the same point, we want to protect our interests. I'm confident that we're protecting them, but we don't want to go down the road of having jurisdictional problems with other agencies when they and the county clearly seem like they are willing to work together. So I don't know exactly what you would recommend that, that I have in the letter, unless it's just the status that I understand things to be at now.
Well, the letter item, I was just specifically on Sussex to say that the council had passed this resolution, but we're not sending a letter because of your conversation with the attorney. Became that they're not about to make a decision. Maybe before they make
a
decision,
that
we give the council another opportunity to comment. DEP has already has a process where they're asking the council for comments before they take action on any other
We actually learned of it. There was a snafu actually in OSG's notification to us. We didn't happen to be on the agency list, and so we didn't get it in a formal way. We heard about it, and so we inquired. They've now added us to the list, so it's a little bit more complex than that. But bottom line is, when they knew that we didn't get notice, wanted to make sure we had the information, and they were trying to keep their timetable. I would highlight one other thing, which is. You know, we've been careful not to actually formally comment on certain things that are in progress, and I guess we'll write the letter so that you know in a way that preserves our ability so we're not prejudiced, but maybe not indicating that we'll definitely comment because we haven't
fully... We'd like the opportunity to comment.
Yeah.
Or
not. Yeah.
A couple of people who don't want to speak, so I won't go on that for that. Most of me think at the last meeting, someone read a letter on your behalf, and I wrote a response to you, but it had a typo in it, so I'll sign it at the end of this meeting, and you can either pick it up or it'll be mailed to you.
Thank you. My name is Deborah Post. I heard from a colleague that during public comments at the last council meeting, an environmental advocate argued that we farmers should just really be proud to have endangered flowers and other species on our farmland. Are we to conjure an image of a farmer laying on the ground in the midst of his cornfield, whispering comforting words of protection and pride to a small pink wildflower he has just encountered? What kind of acid-laced pot have these greenies been smoking? Do they not know that the mere existence of an endangered species habitat will cost a landowner a seven-figure number in lost development value? Do they not know that the discovery of an endangered wildflower is a farmer's nightmare, not a lovely dream? Are they not aware that intrepid DEP-paid trespassers enter farmers' properties every day, risking trivial fines in pursuit of an endangered species habitat discovery? The Highlands Act provides every negative incentive imaginable to the realization of the environmentalists' dreams. Development is roaring in the planning area. Endangered species are more endangered. Open space and adjacent locations is being frenetically sold as landowners, albeit reluctantly, seek to cash out before the Highlands' contagious virus arrives in their neighborhood. And have you heard the recent farmer jokes? What's larger, a farmer's boot heel or a wood turtle? What's a farmer's best friend? Roundup. The Highlands Act is an unmitigated disaster. The environmentalists know this. They are as unhappy with the act as the landowners. This council can't seem to create a regional master plan. The DEP can't seem to enact any rules. No one can identify voluntary TDR receiving zones. The work presented earlier is largely a recreation of an existing wheel. Your council members aren't even showing up. When we were children and a ball play went awry with lots of disagreements, we just called a do-over. We backed up the game and replayed the ball play. And we all went home friends. The Highlands Act is a do-over. Instead of admitting the need for a statutory do-over, the environmentalists just call on the landowners to embrace their gargantuan losses and sacrifice. Today I'd like to ask them, what are you environmentalists willing to contribute? Environmental groups are active and successful fundraisers. Instead of spending donations on paid lobbyists, why not contribute to a landowner equity compensation fund? I challenge the Highlands Coalition to earmark 50% of their membership dues and contributions for landowner just compensation. Additionally, I challenge the state of New Jersey to match these funds dollar for dollar. For environmental gain, is it not fair and appropriate for all of society to share the financial pain? Thank you.
I'm Julia Summers. I'm the Executive Director of the New Jersey Highlands Coalition, and I'm delighted that we're apparently so wealthy. I'm actually here to applaud you on the tool, you and the council staff, on the tools that you have developed and obviously will be beginning to add to, which is a phenomenal development and tool to help you put the plan into place and to make it accessible to the public. It's a spectacular event I'm delighted about today, but we really look forward to seeing the data behind it as it is released. We are concerned that about what's in that data and how it may be interpreted in the future. I also wanted to reference a Sussex County Planning Board meeting that I attended on June 1st, at which the endorsement for the initial plan endorsement for the county's strategic growth plan was considered. It was unfortunate that there weren't more people there, but it turned out that the county had somehow forgotten to publish the press release that had been sent for them to publish in the local newspapers by the Office of Smart Growth. However, there were a few of us there talked about our concern that the Office of Smart Growth should wait until there is a regional master plan in place, not just the data, but all the policies that will go with that. A third of Sussex County is in the Highlands. Some major centers are proposed for endorsement. Mr. Vetrano was there. And we are very concerned that this process take its time to allow the regional master plan to be considered by the Office of Smart Growth and that there be a merging of the two, they be consistent. When we said that, a number of people got up, including one of Mr. Vetrano's fellow freeholders, and basically appealed to the Office of Smart Growth not to wait, not to delay. In speaking with her afterwards, I said it might be 6 years if you were to wait to go through some amendment later on, and it was quite clear from her response that that was what was expected. 6 years is too long. It's really important to get this right now. As a result, I would request that you do send a letter to the Office of Smart Growth and specifically not just say that you're not ready, but ask them to wait until the regional master plan is in place and there can be consistency between the RMP for the Highlands and the state plan. Thank you very much.
Yes. That meeting on June 1st, the county did not forget to notice anybody. That was a forum that was put on by the Office of Smart Growth. Let me just add that Sussex County is very supportive of regional planning. That strategic growth plan was funded by the state of New Jersey and has been 5 years in the making. Okay, that plan, the County of Sussex reached out to every possible discipline and agency that you could possibly imagine and look for input. That was not something that has been done in the dark of the night in a back room. So I just want the public to clearly understand that that's not something that all of a sudden has just developed in the last 6 months that we would like to see be adopted. It's been 5 years in the making. And yes, one of those colleagues of mine does want to see that be adopted, like the entire Thriller board, because it's about getting things done, not dragging things out any longer than it's already taken. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Erkan Dalapovsky. I'm from Lodi, New Jersey, and I'm in the process of buying a piece of lot in Long Valley, and it's a flag lot. And this Highlands law it's kind of like a hostage, holding the people hostage in a way. The owner can't sell it because I can't build nothing because of the impervious coverage. The lot is a 18 acres lot, but the 700 feet driveway. Now, impervious coverage, it's less than a quarter of an acre reduced island law, and less than an acre disturbing. Now, the driveway itself, 12-foot driveway with a few pull-ups and everything, is about 12,000 square feet coverage. Less than a quarter of an acre is about 10,900 square feet. So I'm stuck. If I buy that property, I can't even put a driveway in there with the impervious coverage. Whether it's a gravel or asphalt, they're saying it's a considered impervious coverage. Now, 18 acres, if I have a piece of property of 18 acres, and I'm going to put just one house, I'm not building all these multiple buildings. In 18 acres, I think they should see this. The driveway should not be the impervious coverage, because you have to get into this property from somewhere, which is the property has the driveway should be. It's 700 feet long to get in from the street. Now, you got to get in some way to this property. If you count this as an impervious coverage, you're not going to be able to build nothing over here. So you got 18 acres. This 18 acres, if I'm putting one house, how much I'm ruining the water conservation or the Water Act and everything. What am I doing wrong if I would buy this 18 acres of property to put up one family house? In your agency's islands law, I've been 3 months in the phone with Trenton over here. Everybody has answers like, maybe we can do this, maybe we can do that. Nobody has a solid answer to tell you that this is done. I go to the engineer, he says, no, your lot is existing lot. It was done in 1997, before the islands law came in. So this lot should be exempt from this island's law. Now, because this was before that, it should be exempt, he's saying. But another thing is the owner, if the owner puts a house over here, he can cover this lot, anything, 40,000 feet or 50,000, he can cover because he's the owner before the Islands Act. Now, if I buy it, I can even cover 15,000 square feet. So why is this, if I buy it, I can cover it, the owner can.
I'm not sure who's telling you that, but I don't want to get into that. What I'd suggest is you talk to a member of our staff right now, and maybe Ross McDonald, who's standing behind you.
Well, I spoke to...
Yeah, I gave them the authority. They needed authority or folks to get a definite answer from, and I gave them that information.
Well, thank you for you gave them what?
Information of where they were saying they weren't sure where to go, so I gave them the address at the Division of Waterheads.
Well, I spoke to them. I just spoke to the guy you just told them. I spoke to those people in Trenton, and they said no. He said it can't be done. Even they gave me an answer that the owner cannot build and sell it. He has to live there.
In terms of who the authoritative folks were, they said their problem was they had to ask
them. There's no solid answer.
And so, so I gave them the idea of the folks at Trenton who could give them that answer. And as for that answer, that's a deep regulatory issue based on the statute.
Maybe someone on staff here could follow up with the DEP staff, but it sounds like he's repeating it. I don't think what he's repeating is accurate in terms of the act. Thank you for your comments.
Only thing, they should put that the driveway should be exempt. Less than quarter of a quarter.
Sir, we have to ask you to stop.
Okay.
You can talk after the meeting if you're still
here. Okay, I will.
A lot of other people want to talk.
Hello, I'm Sandy Batty. I'm the Executive Director of the Association of New Jersey Environmental Commissions. I first want to thank the council for assembling the array of natural resources information and making it available to the public. And ANJEC has been following the development of the Highlands Plan and also for many, many years the state plan, because we see both these plans as ways to bolster natural resource protection on the local level. And by your assembling this data, it's going to bolster the and enrich the natural resources planning locally and also on the county level. I want to repeat the request that you ask the Office of Smart Growth to withhold any endorsements of either county plans or municipal plans until you have finished your regional master plan. The reason is twofold. You don't want to have the uncertainty that will develop with towns and with the counties of not knowing whose plan will really prevail once a plan has been endorsed, because you'll be having, you could have potentially a municipal plan endorsed, a county plan, and then your plan in, eventually endorsed by the State Planning Commission. And the second thing is back to the information that you are generating, you've heard about today. Part of a petition for endorsement includes having a natural resource inventory. And as we heard, the Sussex plan has been in undergoing refinement for the last 5 years. A lot of the information that you're generating is brand new information. The Sussex plan cannot take advantage of that unless the endorsement is postponed. We would ask that you take a very strong position on this, and as well ask that any municipal plans for endorsement be postponed. Municipalities are required under regulations as part of their COA substantive certification to file for endorsement, and also if they're going to participate in the TDR, state TDR program. And so we need to be very cognizant of what municipalities in the Highlands are petitioning for endorsement, and to make sure that instead they're informed by the regional master plan. Thank you.
Good morning, or yeah, good afternoon, I guess. My name is Andy Drysdale. I am trapped in the preservation area at 32 East Fox Chase Road, Chester Township, Morris County, New Jersey. On July 4th of this year, less than 2 weeks from today, we will celebrate 230th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. At that time, in 1776, we were a new nation with a limited number of rules and laws by which to govern ourselves. This is one of the reasons why our country has excelled as it has. Since that time, 230 years ago, legislators have been busy making laws, some of them good ones, some bad ones, some promoted by special interests, and some bad laws piggyback on some good ones, and some enacted because of lack of good information or lack of communication from the public. Too many laws create a huge tangled web of red tape and require large bureaucratic agencies to administer and enforce them. This causes a large expense to the taxpayer. Some laws are abused and taken to extremes for which they were not intended and need to be amended, while bad laws need to be totally eliminated. Please contact as many legislators as you can and ask them to help us keep our country and our state on the right path by stopping the outrageous abuse of eminent domain and by repealing the horrible Highlands Act. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Jeff Broadhurst. I'll be brief since I must. Topic for my discussion is TDRs. The responsibility for TDRs does fall on this agency, this group. I have a 130-acre farm in Hunterdon County and have been going through your process, through your procedure, trying to find a way to get just compensation for what's been taken. I participated in your meetings for stakeholders. I appreciate being part of those. Steve and Jeff Lajava were great in keeping those together. And during the landowners forum, it was brought up that they are the company, you guys are the board of directors. Well, I'll add to that, that makes me the stockholder. And I'll give you a stockholder's report on what I thought happened. I was disappointed that in coming to the deadline of when the TDRs were supposed to have been enacted, there was so little data. I asked questions like, how many acres are in the highlands that need TDRs, are going to be sending? How many people? How many lots? None of those answers were available. And I don't know how you can fix a problem if you don't even know how big the problem is. The landowner forum I found highly insulting. The longest speaking speaker at the forum was telling us how to get tax advantages by donating our land. Well, the audience was mostly over 65, mostly by the dress farmers. They don't have any income to shelter. I mean, it was just, you know, you already took it, now you want us to give it. The flea market afterwards, I thought it was going to be like a trade show where you go around and, you know, find out who's going to pay you stuff. It was more like a flea market where the people at the table were trying to find the best deals. And I went to all the tables and found that I was not eligible for any of them. There was one group of people that wanted to buy a right-of-way through our property to get to a parkland behind it. Well, we don't want to sell. We want what's already been taken and be compensated for it. We filed for preservation with Hunterdon County, and we were denied. One of the requirements is that your farm has to be at least 50% open space. Ours is not, so we were denied. So right now, their TDRs is the last step available, as I see it. And TDRs is that it's fiction. If there's $6 billion worth of equity that needs to be compensated, which is a number I see floated around, there are 38,000 houses or permits that were issued in 2005. So if you charged $10,000 for every single house that was built in New Jersey in a year, it would take you 16 years to compensate the landowners that have already had their property stolen. To put it another way, it's $9 billion per year that's a gross building value. The math doesn't add up. That's the whole state, and you guys can only deal with a little sliver. That's not going to work. I'll cut it off. Thank you.
I'll put this over here so it's not anybody's voice. Being Kurt's not here.
Thank you.
My name is Hank Klump. I'm a farmer in Hunterdon. My 150 acres been put in the Highlands Preservation for political reasons. I've been told by the New Jersey Farm Bureau about the drop in farmland values in the preservation area that has been documented by new appraisal data, SADC, saying that the appraisals of the farmland from the easement purchase application shows a loss of almost 70% in the development value. This information came from appraisals of pre-Highlands Act value compared with post-Highlands Act value on each property that was subject to the appraised process of the SADC. The almost 70% loss is an average figure among 12 preservation area farms, totaling 839 acres. I have also been told the legislation intent stated in the Highlands Act was to protect the land value equity of all Highlands landowners. What happened? Is this council taking all this consideration as you develop the master plan? Is 6 months going to make a difference? At the end of 6 months, will the money be in place to make things right? Landowners in the Highlands Preservation Area have been left hanging. We are allowed to speak for only 3 minutes or maybe 6 minutes once a month at 10 a.m. when many of us should be out plowing, planting, or making hay on the land that is hanging in jeopardy. Can you tell me about any progress you are making, if any, to help us? Do you think the Sick Highlands Act can be cured, or are you waiting 6 months for a huge Band-Aid to be manufactured just to cover the problem? Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. My name is Scott Olson. I'm from Byram Township. Despite what was insinuated earlier, I'm an environmentalist who embraces the Highlands Regional Master Plan. And I wanted to also mention to Mr. Vetrano that I think Sussex County's done a wonderful job with getting a lot of information together, and I applaud the fact that they're going through that process, but I think it should wait. The real reason I'm here today is to discuss four road projects that are taking place in Sussex County, three of which are in Byram Township, two are proposed, and one is in progress. All are either in or abutting the preservation area. These projects will all have wetlands degradation or encroachment and require mitigation. The DOT and DEP have met and are planning mitigation in Washington Township, Morris County, by using eminent domain of a 17-acre farm parcel. There are existing areas of degraded stream buffers and wetlands within Byram, within the preservation area, that can and should be mitigated. The use of eminent domain and taking of farmland for mitigation, especially a parcel so far from where the damage is being done, is wrong. While your regional master plan is being created, development pressure and natural resource degradation continues, even in the preservation area, through DOT projects. And what I'd like to ask is, does this council have authority or influence over these types of decisions, wetlands mitigation and DEP permits for DOT projects? And if so, will the council step forward and assist in having mitigation done where the damage is being done? Thank you.
Hi, I'm Susan Buck, Oxford, New Jersey, here to talk about some DEP rule misinformation as well. Back in the winter of this year, the Highlands Conservation Association was accused by members of the council and some of the members in the audience of spreading misinformation about the Highlands Act and what it entailed. So I know I came here at the comment period and figured said something like I thought in 10 minutes we could get it all resolved, and followed up with an email on some of the issues and didn't hear back. But I hear a lot, so I know that it's really the DEP's job to answer this sort of thing. So I wrote to the DEP and they got back to me. So to clear up the questions, I'll paraphrase it since I only get 3 minutes. But one of the issues is, can a landowner who is not a farmer and who does not have a woodland management plan cut more than an acre of trees? The answer is no. That meets the definition of a major Highlands development. Can that same person cut more than an acre of brush? The answer was no. That meets the definition of a major Highlands development. And can that same person cut more than an acre of grass? This is where it kind of got kind of cool. The answer is, I'll have to quote this one, regarding the cutting of grass, the answer is more difficult. If by cutting grass you are speaking about the maintenance of a lawfully existing lawn with no change in the use of the property, then the answer is that it is not subject to regulation under the Act. So perhaps we were guilty of misinformation because I was unfamiliar with the term of lawfully existing lawn, still am, but in any case, we weren't sure about the whole grass thing. You know, disturbing vegetation seemed like vegetation, so that's why I got very specific right down to the level of grass. But to straighten out the record, I thought everything was all set. You cannot disturb vegetation unless it's for agricultural purposes with an approved plan. I hope we're all clear on this. It wasn't misinformation that we were spreading. You cannot go out and cut down an acre of trees for firewood unless you are doing it for some agricultural purpose or you have a woodland management plan. I thought we were all clear until we went to the, I was also a guest at the meeting in Warren County by the DEP for the local officials on what these rules were. I thought, this is it, it's all cleared up. It is so far from not cleared up, it's not funny. This guy was amazing. He had, one thing he showed me is that there's two different tracks that you can go down. You can go to the DEP, who will say no, 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 1,000 times no, and if we even say you're exempt, you're going to have a deed restriction on your lot. Or we can, as the DEP encourages the municipal officials do, go to the municipality who will say, yeah, looks like you're exempt to me, and go ahead on your merry way and follow through on your exemption with no deed restrictions, no permit fee, no waiting 10 months for approval. Now, to me, this is being caused by budgetary constraints. I could be wrong, but the state of New Jersey does not have enough money to enforce this law. They do not have enough money to even educate the people about what it really takes. What they have done instead is encourage the municipalities to act independently. If they think it's exempt, it's okay by the DEP. They have said they will not hold the municipalities accountable for making a mistake. However, if someone turns somebody in, that landowner will be held accountable, and that landowner will be subject to $25,000 a day fine, perhaps bankruptcy, because their local municipal official told them that they were exempt and it was okay to go ahead. I want to point this out because I thought the misinformation was getting straightened out. It's not. It's getting worse.
Hi, I'm Wilma Fry, and I'm speaking on behalf of New Jersey Conservation Foundation. I'm up here because I want to encourage the council to please send a letter or contact the Office of Smart Growth and request that all of the plans for endorsement in the Highlands area be postponed by the Office of Smart Growth and the State Planning Commission until after you have the original master plan done. In the case of the Sussex County plan, I attended on behalf of NJCF a number of meetings of the Strategic Growth Advisory Committee, which was overseeing the strategic growth plan in Sussex County, which began, these meetings began in the year 2000. And I will say that the purpose of the strategic growth plan was much more development-oriented than the Highlands plan, and the members of the 17 members of the Strategic Growth Committee, only three of them had specifically environmental interests. The meetings were held in a very small room, and the times that I went, I was the only member of the public present. There were perhaps one or two other people present other than the staff and the members of the growth committee. So it was not a process that received a great deal of public scrutiny while it was occurring. After about 2 years, there was an extensive outreach to municipalities. There were approximately, I think, 20 meetings conducted where they took the maps to the municipalities. It was supposed to be a point of visioning, but it was really a point of reviewing the data, and the money was almost gone at that point. There were requirements in the contract that asked for a water supply and capacity analysis to be included in the plan. I do not believe it ever was. We've heard today about the excellence of the underlying data that is going to form and inform the basis of the Highlands Regional Plan, and none of that kind of information at that level was incorporated as the underpinnings of that plan. Specifically, the landscape project, threatened endangered species, was not included in the underpinnings. Neither was forest land use and neither was a water sustainability study. So I think that the outcomes and the proposals that are in the Sussex plan are in direct contradiction and contravention of the kinds of goals of the Highlands Regional Plan. And since the Highlands Act supersedes and has occurred since the State Plan Act, that this act and this council should take precedence, and I would request that this council attempt to assert its authority in that area. Thank you very much.
I'm Robert Fry, no relation to Wilma, a farmer, Pohatcom Township, and I'm asking on behalf of the Warren County Board of Agriculture for some response on our request for assistance in setting up an ethanol plant in the Highlands area, and I'd like to have this become part of the minutes. Thank you.
There is a letter we sent in response to that probably 3 or 4 weeks ago.
They had not received it as of yesterday. To whom did you address it?
Addressed it to whoever sent the letter.
Yeah. Pardon?
I got my copy of it, so I don't know.
We can try to look.
We got it at the county clearing board. That's where, yeah, look in your last book.
Okay.
We'll double check on it.
Okay.
Sorry. Other comments?
Good afternoon. I'm Tom D'Alessio, Vice President, New Jersey Director of Regional Plan Association. I'd like to first compliment and congratulate you on this important milestone of starting to release the technical documents. I'd like to compliment your staff on not only providing information. I was at the Raritan Highlands meeting this morning, the compact, and I understand that this information is going to be released, and we look forward to that. But also, importantly, that you're listening. When you look at that flow chart and you see, as Steve Balzano has indicated, that issues such as transportation and others are going to be fed into smart growth and are going to be fed into the land use capability map. That was a point that I had raised when that chart was first displayed to the public. And so we thank you very much for that consideration. Last, I'd like to just speak very briefly on the issue of whether the State Planning Commission should wait regarding plan endorsement. I approach it from an issue of practicality, and I can understand completely where Freeholder Vetrano is coming from on this, an issue, a program that's been in place in Sussex County for a number of years. It actually followed a number of years of trying to get a number of towns to work together for center designation, and the idea of the State Planning Commission was to apply a regional approach. So we need to compliment Sussex County and the individual municipalities for starting to work towards that. But from a simple practical standpoint, I think there is a real question of what is the legal standing of a plan that's endorsed by the State Planning Commission before a Highlands plan is actually adopted. If the Highlands plan will provide a legal shield as one of the real incentives for conformance with the regional master plan, how will the courts view this legal shield and that issue vis-a-vis plan endorsement of the State Planning Commission? As someone who helped write the two plan endorsement reports for the State Planning Commission for East Amwell and Bedminster that were used by the courts to support the State Planning Commission and, more importantly, the towns in their efforts. I very much believe that what you're doing is so critically important that we need to get it right, and that the State Planning Commission and the Highlands Water Protection and Planning Council need to work together. And if it takes a couple of more months, I regret that that happens, but I think that'll, obviate what could be years of litigation. So I encourage you to take that approach from a simple, practical standpoint. Thank you.
If I could comment while the next speaker is coming up, one of the issues, and not to go into depth here, is there seems to be a conflict. If the town has put in a new, if the county plan is endorsed, then each municipality must comply with that in order to get code certification. But if the regional master plan is different than that, it's almost as if a town would have to choose between either state plan endorsement or conformance with the regional master plan. And that's, I think, one of the key things that's background to all of this. That's all.
Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is James Began.
And I just wanted to point out about the Pohatcong Valley Superfund site is a considerable distance from the Alpha 519 project site. Also, that there's no evidence that the plume or its migration will have any effect on the development of the site or its future homeowners. And there's no evidence that the development of the site will have any effect on the plume. Just wanted to point that out. Thank you.
My name is David Chope. I live in Long Valley. A while ago, you adopted a resolution concerning sustainable agriculture, and at that time, I asked the council, and you referred the question to Mr. Balzano, whether in the analysis, the parcel-by-parcel analysis, there was any part in that analysis concerning the suitability of land for agricultural viability. The answer was no. Part of that resolution included niche farming, the concept of niche farming. The New York Times in last Sunday's edition did an article about niche farming. It says a whole bunch of interesting things. Apparently, niche farming is occurring in a radius around New York City. It has some people who are niche farmers who are saying such things as, even as real mud-splattered working farms are fading out, though a new kind of animal husbandry is coming in, niche hobby and artisan farming is on the rise, hobby farming, often with perfect barns, manor houses, and manicured lawns, places where Tolstoy would be perfectly at ease with his ledger and progressive agricultural ideas. Tolstoy was a Russian aristocrat. It goes on to say, even in the best of circumstances, they often just break even. But the root of this type of farming is not money, meat, or even ribbons at the agricultural fair. It is love of animals. There's no economic basis so far in this. It goes on to say, well, it says a lot of things, but get the Sunday's paper and you'll read it. The reason some people have them is they're pretty out in the field, speaking about pretty cattle, llamas, alpacas, and such. It's not an economic thing at all. There are some people who prefer to put sink money in a farm rather than give it to Uncle Sam. Tax write-off. And it goes on, people talk about people with the names like Bunny. Bunny, who's an interior designer, she has heritage chickens. That's what Bunny does. Then we have Tiggy. Tiggy, who's the wife of a stockbroker, a retired stockbroker. Tiggy spent $10,000 for vet bills for one of her poor cows that got sick. This is the deal. Is the purpose of this act to make places for the beautiful people to have farms for Tiggy and Bunny and perhaps Timmy's? I'm not really sure. But I see no economic viability in farming, having been a farmer since 71, and I see no basis for you doing anything to support agricultural viability, which is mentioned in the form of lip service in this act. The whole thing is a scam to make nice places at cheap prices for Tiggies and Bunnies. Thank you.
Bob Ezek, Director of Planning for Somerset County, and also I'd like to compliment the staff and the council on reaching this milestone. We've been waiting for the release of these technical documents and the data, both at the county and the local level. And also I'd like to thank Steve in advance for attending a special workshop next week in Burnage Township, where we'll have the opportunity to meet one-on-one with our towns to go over this information in more detail. I just want to briefly comment on not necessarily the Sussex situation, but what's happening in general in terms of endorsement both at the local and the county level. One of the problems, in my opinion, is that there hasn't been a concerted effort to finalize these memorandums of understanding, particularly, you know, with COA, with the NJTPA, and even with the Office of Smart Growth, regarding, you know, the role of the council and the endorsement process, how the plan or the information that's coming out of the council should be used. And also, you need to keep in mind that, you know, a lot of things are moving forward. You know, you heard the Alpha situation, which a court mandate. There are consent agreements with DP, such as which the county had to enter regarding update of upper route and master plan. And part of the problem is that we have not been able to access critical data. For example, you're posting the information in a PDF format. We need it in a GIS format. It does no good to us in a PDF format. So I know Steve mentioned that that'll be forthcoming. That needs to be pushed forth soon so that these other planning efforts can continue to move forward in a timely fashion, and the coordination that you're trying to achieve you know, can really happen. Thank you.
My name is Nancy Chambell, and I'm with the Warren County Environmental Commission. I also would like to clarify some of our points regarding the Alpha 519 in relation to the Pohatcon Superfund site. Although that proposed development is actually on the aquifer that where the TCE is migrating to, because of the public water, we would not expect that particular community to be affected by the contamination directly. Our concern regarding the Pohatcon contamination is that the public water supply is a finite resource, and it is shared in common by more municipalities than Alpha. To take away a capacity from the surrounding neighborhoods, surrounding municipalities, and a regional approach to allocate to Alpha 519 could leave that particular municipality without the public water service that would be needed for their private wells that currently exists, particularly in Greenwich Township, where we know that the TCE is going to invade. So those people, the remediation would be to hook them up to public service. Our concern is that it would not be available if it's allocated elsewhere in the common sharing of that public water supply when it is needed. The direct impact that we see environmentally for the Alpha 519 impact, we have concerns about the historic sinkhole activity as aquifers collapse when there's too much movement of water through the karst limestone. Thank you.
Julia Summers, Executive Director at New Jersey Highlands Coalition. Just one thing, I was here this morning for the Plan Development Committee meeting, and Steve Balzano mentioned that staff has been considering doing away with the phrase smart growth and making it smart planning, and I would completely support that. I also wanted to let you know that yesterday there was a stakeholders meeting at DEP for water quality management planning for the new rules that rule that is being talked about, and this was an opportunity for input. And I wanted to let you know that I made a request on the record that the Highlands Council be a formally delegated legal authority for wastewater management and water quality management planning. It makes a lot of sense. And I thought I should let you know so you weren't surprised when they said somebody had done that. Thank you.
I'd like to thank everybody who spoke and both of the people who didn't. any other comments from council members?
I have one other matter to bring up. I mentioned quickly to Dante the other day, and I just remembered it, Dante, that there have been comments in the press from development applicants and their professionals, as well as testimony at land use board meetings that I think convey some misinformation, and it's very important misinformation very important to correct the misinformation, I think I'm trying to say. There is a body of thought in existence and being expanded, I think, that development applications occurring locally that are in the planning area are being portrayed as suitable without question because they exist within the planning area. In Greenwich Township, there was just testimony about this at a public hearing for the newly adopted master plan. In other words, the concept of if it's in the planning area, anything goes, because the state has already reviewed this, and it's all 400 and some thousand acres are suitable for development, and it should be encouraged, and everything should be approved without question. It's more than an isolated incident that I've been hearing this in the last 6 months. I want to suggest to the council and our staff that we take a look at putting out some policy statement or clarification. I'm not really sure what the document would be, but something that should be sent to all municipalities and counties to clarify that issue. Something we all understand because we work with this so closely all the time, but not everyone does.
Mr. Chairman, I'd just like to comment. I think and part of the discussions we've heard here this morning tend to seem to want to blur the distinction between the preservation area and the planning area. And we can't do that. We have a clear distinction drawn in the Act. We've had discussions on this council about what to do about that separatism. I think certainly we're not going to support the idea that anything goes in the planning area simply because it's in the But the DEP regulations and local zoning regulations and all other regulations that apply in any planning area development will apply regardless of what the Highlands Council Regional Master Plan looks like. The idea in the planning area is to encourage conformance with the Regional Master Plan when it's completed by municipalities in the planning area. But I think it must be borne in mind that there are, under the law, the Highlands Act, there are distinctions between the preservation area and the planning area. So I would tread very cautiously on that.
Just to reiterate what's been said in a number of different ways, I think this is our most significant meeting since our first meeting, and really a major accomplishment, particularly on the part of the staff. Well, the members. Our next the Smart Growth Committee meeting starts at 2. And our next.
We can if we public noticed it at 2.
Probably everybody who will be there is here now and would rather we start at 1, but we probably can't do that. Our next council meeting is July 27th at 10. Thank you all.
Mr. Chairman, if I could add, there will be copies of the public release document available to all public attendees. Mary Jude has some in the back. I'll leave a bunch on the top front table as well.
Jack.